It's a joy to be with you all for study of Bhagavad Gita. And each session, I begin with a short grounding prayer, and then I'll share Yogacharya O'Brien's commentary on Bhagavad Gita that she shared a few years ago. Followed by that, I'll share a few comments, and then we generally have time for your questions and responses. So let's begin with a grounding prayer. Let your mind sink into your heart of wisdom. We offer gratitude to God and to the gurus of Kriya Yoga who have shined a light on these timeless teachings of the Bhagavad Gita through the generations. We acknowledge our own soul nature and open to the revelation of our innate wisdom that these teachings may become useful in a practical manner. May our time of study bring illumination. May that lead to peace and to joy and to ultimate freedom. Om, peace, peace, peace. In our continued exploration of chapter 3 of the Bhagavad Gita, we are learning how to act skillfully in this interactive world. How can action support liberation rather than bind us? How can the choices that we make each day reflect the truth that we are spiritual beings and that this life itself is divine? And we ended our last session with reflections on verse 19 of chapter 3 with this translation from Armstrong and Rishi. Therefore, always engage in the action appropriate to the situation, with no attachment to the outcome. The person who performs their karmas, their actions, in this way eventually goes to the Paramdharma, the supreme abode, Brahman. And Sargent's translation of verse 19, therefore, constantly unattached, perform that action which is your duty. Indeed, performing action while unattached, a person attains the supreme. So we've been considering the transformative effect of engaging in action as worship, an offering to the divine for the good of all. This cultivates freedom from selfish desire and its karmic consequences. Selfishness cuts us off from full self-awareness and confines us to a narrow, grasping, unfulfilled way of living, always wanting, always needing, never satisfied. The Sufi teacher Kabir Helminski wrote, "We are knee-deep in a river. We are knee-deep in a river searching for water. We are part of an invisible river, but we are so distracted by outer things and what we imagine they could mean to us, that we lose contact with the source of our own being. We lose touch with the invisible river, the waters of life, through our identification with unconscious inner processes and with outer demands. We are knee-deep in a river, searching for water. The antidote to this life of restless desire is a prayerful orientation. To live each day with love, with clear intention, and with the spirit of giving, giving from source to the source, from the source to the source. A way of living full because it begins in fullness. Uma writes that inspired by this, she wrote the following prayer. Let me find my center in you, the divine. Let me find my center in you. Keep drawing me into the depths of your presence again and again. Let me pour out, spill over your peace, your love, your indescribable joy. So, verse 19 affirms that one who acts without attachment to results finds liberation through action. But of course, this does not mean careless or irresponsible behavior. Quite the opposite. It is action consciously offered with the highest intention of love and blessing for the welfare of all. This teaching seems at first to contradict verses in chapter 2, which emphasized knowledge rather than action as liberating. Chapter 2, verse 47, your right is to action alone, never to its fruits. Never let there be attachment to inaction. Chapter 2, verse 48. Fixed in yoga, perform actions. Evenness of mind is yoga. And verse 49 of chapter 2. Action is inferior to the yoga of wisdom, Arjuna. Seek refuge in wisdom. How do we reconcile these differences between chapter 2 and chapter 3? Well, the Bhagavad Gita is pointing us to motive and awareness. Not simply the action itself, but the intention and the spirit behind it. Motive and awareness. Wisdom is called superior to action because liberation arises through realization of truth, not through doing. Liberation arises through realization of truth, not through doing. What is eternally so cannot be produced by any act. Knowledge reveals higher reality. Action prepares the mind for that realization. So, how is action liberating? You know this. When action is performed without attachment, it becomes a method for freeing the mind from ego identity. Karma yoga, like bhakti, raja, yana, kriya yoga, purifies body and mind So the higher self is revealed. Patanjali describes this in the Yoga Sutras. When the mind is freed from agitation, the self abides in its own nature. When the mind is freed from agitation, the self abides in its own nature. Similarly, karma yoga undermines the ego's I, me, and mine by removing its supports. When action is freed from ownership, from clinging to results, it dissolves the ego's hold, allowing our true nature to shine forth. Buddha expressed this realization in the Dhammapada. Vainly, I sought the builder of my house through countless lives. But now I see you, O builder. Never again shall you build my house. I have snapped the rafters, split the ridge pole, and beaten out desire. My mind is free. Indeed, by performing action while unattached, a person attains the supreme, as verse 19, chapter 3 informs us. To use the work that comes to us to become more and more unselfish, clearer in our discernment, and awaken to the truth of our being, there are some simple steps we can take. Number one. Become aware of the motive prompting our action. We can think of this as our why. Become aware of the motive prompting our action, discerning if we have attachment to the results or the outcome. And number two, practice reducing our selfish desires by doing what we do for others, for the welfare of all, without attachment to results. Practice reducing our selfish desires by doing what we do for the welfare of all. And number three, intend continually to learn from our engagement in life. Become aware of our why, our motive. Practice reducing selfish desires and intend continually to learn from our engagement in life. Umaji said that the most powerful teaching her guru, Roy Eugene Davis, offered to her on karma yoga through his words and by his example of selfless service was making it clear that the opportunity to act and to serve is a privilege we are given. He would often speak about the ministry or what he would call the work by saying, "We are grateful for those we are privileged to serve." Umaji said that sometimes before meeting with someone or before engaging in some work activity, she would take a moment to reflect on his words and his example and envision the person she was about to meet with or the work about to be performed. Envision that and feel in her heart of hearts what a profound privilege it is to be able to serve. This practical application of the experience of the teachings is absolutely transformative. Imagine how different it could be to meet someone thinking that you're going to do something for them or there's something needed from you versus the deeper truth that what is always before us is a gift, an opportunity for shaping our own heart and mind. Swami Vivekananda echoed this truth. He wrote, "Karma, in its effect on character, is the most tremendous power a person has to deal with. We are responsible for what we are, and whatever we wish ourselves to be, we have the power to make ourselves. If what we are now is the result of our past actions, it follows that what we wish to be in the future can be produced by our present actions. So we have to know how to act." Verses 20 through 22 of chapter 3. 20 reads, "Perfection was attained by kings like Janaka through action alone. For the mere maintenance of the world, you should act." Verse 21, "Whatever a great person does, others follow. Whatever standard they set, the world pursues." These next two verses invite us to look at how an awakened person lives and engages in action for the well-being of all. Even a great leader with many responsibilities can engage in action while remaining free through pure intention and non-attachment. So here the Gita is saying, look, this is practical. Look, this is practical. It's a science for learning how to live skillfully. Think of great ones you are aware of or have known who have set an example of how to act selflessly, how to engage fully in life with the joy that follows non-attachment, how to be a conduit for and an example of divine love. Their example demonstrates how to live joyously, selflessly, as instruments of divine love. And today we'll conclude with verse 22 of chapter 3. This is the translation from Armstrong and Rishi. "My dear Arjuna, in all the Trilokas, the three cosmic realms, in all the Trilokas, there is no object I seek to attain, and there is nothing that I am compelled to do. Still, I continue to act." The awakened person has nothing to do. Complete freedom from the to-do list. Nothing to weigh on the mind, nothing that must be accomplished. Why is that? Because the awakened person is no longer seeking fulfillment. They are no longer looking for some result of an action. They are no longer seeking fulfillment. Because they have already found it. And abide in it. They have fulfilled the purpose of life, which is to awaken to divine truth. And because they are awake, they act and they contribute to the harmony of all the worlds, because they are an expression of it. Om. I have a few comments to share on verses 20 to 22 of chapter 3, and I entitled this section for myself as Living by Divine Example, the Path of Selfless Action. In these verses, Lord Krishna offers a glimpse into the lives of the wise, those who have realized the divine self, and how they remain engaged in action. Verse 20, Janaka and others attained perfection through action alone, even for the sake of guiding people. You should act. 21, whatever a great person does, others follow. Whatever standard they set, the world pursues. And 22, there is nothing in all three worlds that I am required to do, nor anything to be attained, yet I continue to act, says Krishna. So in these verses, Lord Krishna teaches that action is not only necessary for those who seek liberation, but it continues to have value even after realization. King Janaka, a sage, ruled with detachment, performing his duties for the welfare of all. And in the same way, enlightened beings, although inwardly free, remain outwardly engaged for the upliftment of the world. And of course, in our tradition of Kriya Yoga, this principle shines through the lives of the masters. You know, Paramahansa Yogananda traveled from India to the West, not out of personal ambition, but to serve a divine plan. He said, the greatest purpose of life is to serve others. The greatest purpose of life is to serve others and help them realize their soul's highest potential. And Roy Eugene Davis, echoed this teaching of his guru with clarity. He wrote, when spiritual awakening occurs, there remains a natural impulse to serve, to participate in life without attachment from a higher level of awareness. So these great teachers did not withdraw from the world, but demonstrated how to live in the world without being of it. And here we are in our current era that is marked by uncertainty and polarization and suffering in many ways. Many of us, many spiritual seekers, wonder whether their efforts matter at all. Can inner realization really make a difference in a world that sometimes feels so fractured? And the Gita's response is a resounding yes. Yes, we are called not only to meditate and awaken, but to embody awakened action, to offer our time, our creativity, and even our presence in service to others. As Yogacharya Umaji teaches in Living the Eternal Way, she writes, When we act from the consciousness of unity with the divine, even ordinary tasks become offerings. They become transformational. So, of course, this does not mean taking on more or becoming busier. It means becoming more conscious, more aligned, more awakened to the why of our actions, choosing to show up with compassion, with clarity, and faith, especially when the world seems chaotic. Whether it's parenting or teaching, creating, or simply being kind. Our actions have power. They have great power when they're grounded in self-awareness and offered as service to the divine and to the well-being of all. Sometimes I think that for whatever reason, we lose touch with or we forget the power of our presence. That doesn't really matter if I show up or not. No one will notice. Who am I, right? And at the same time, sometimes, we forget the power of our actions. The enlightened do not act for personal gain, but they continue to act. Why? Out of love, out of divine compassion, and out of the realization of unity, our interconnectedness. Roy G. wrote, "Live in this world as if it were a temple of God." I love this one. It's from How to Use Your Creative Imagination. Live in this world as if it were a temple of God. Serve others as expressions of the divine. So, as we go forth, may we too consciously live as instruments of divine will, offering our actions not for reward, but as expressions of love and of freedom. Let us continue to meditate deeply. Let us serve without attachment. And let our lives be examples that uplift others on this path of awakening. Om. It's a joy to be with you all. We have a little time for your reflections, ahas, remembrances, oh-ohs. Hi, Anne. Can you unmute yourself, Mukti? Do they have power?
Okay, now we're good. Okay, now I can unmute. Thank you. Thank you so much for this morning. I had a lot of talks with Yogacharya when she was around. About because I work in the mental health civil rights movement, and I'm always a little bit worried about holding attachments to outcomes, even though we're working for unity, we're working for the best. And I really like what you said this morning about remembering working towards unity and being that light for others. And I still hold attachments. I still wish for liberation for everybody, but that's my attachment. And as this world and California is turning more towards locking people up more in hospitals and jails, it's hard not to hold the attachment of liberation. But I guess continue to do what I do. And I wanted to add one more thing too. As I live in New York now, it's funny to bring kindness into New York City because, we're West Coasters and I'm from Oregon, and that's what I grew up on is politeness and kindness. And at first, people don't know how to react. And then they say, when you coming back? So the kindness really does pay off, even though it's not quite expected here.
Thank you, Anne. Ultimately, every being will be completely realized and awakened. So, holding that vision as a truth is actually not a form of attachment. So, you can let go of that and know that what you are doing really is shining an inner light on what is ultimately true. And we don't know when or how. But we do know that ultimately all beings will awaken to the truth of who and what they are. God let it be in this lifetime, but we have no control over that. So we just do our work for ourselves and continue, please, to hold that light of truth for all. Yeah. And the power of kindness and compassion. Yeah, in places like New York is remarkable. It's also remarkable in lines at Costco and Safeway, wherever it is you go, not cutting someone off at the gas station or on the highway. Sometimes I'm blamed for being the ultimate reframer. You know, if someone cuts me off or cuts in front of me, oh, why give them my peace of mind? So I just hold them in a heart of kindness. And, we don't know what's happening. They may have a medical emergency and need to cut us off on the road and speed off to get where they're going. We have no idea. So, thank you for shining a light and also on the power of kindness and compassion. So true. Okay, others. Mukti Devi.
Thank you so much, Reverend Sundari, Acharya Sundari. Something that you just said reminded me, for me, it's important that while I'm being kind, that I not take away the work of others. It's been something I've ha had been and working through a lot was not using my discernment in what being kind really is. And it borders on even unhealthy things for myself and for others, people pleasing, not acting in ways that are in harmony with being spiritually mature and emotionally mature, I think is what that amounts to. And it's still something I have to really keep in my consciousness in order not to cross that boundary for. But it's, I like the light that you've shone on it today. I guess that comes in line with where we say that wisdom is greater than action, and it's important that in preparing myself for liberation and enlightenment, that I also engage in supporting myself in developing that wisdom by constantly checking in with myself, with my own inner knowing. So my own inner knowing knows when I'm crossing that line. I think
Yeah.
it's when I'm not using that inner connection and inner knowing that I may think superficially that I'm doing something that is beneficial and kind, and in fact, I'm not.
Yes, thank you, Mukti Devi. Yes, Uma has told us often, and of course, you know, we all know that the important thing is that we engage in wisdom-guided action. Action that is conscious. And I love how often Umaji has told us, and I also know you all know this, that our kindness does not mean that we become a doormat. So our acts of kindness, should not be out of a sort of codependence or in either trying to make decisions for others or in letting what we do cause harm to us in some way. So you're exactly right, Mukti, that when we have wisdom-guided action, when we're conscious of the why of our action, and I love that Uma said and that the scriptures today said, it is ultimately important that we continue to learn from life, to learn and grow from our actions and our inaction. Both. We're all continuing to grow and learn. So thank you. But it just really brought to mind Uma's teachings, wisdom-guided action. That's what we want. And of course, our spiritual practices are what illumine our consciousness and purify our mental field so that we have the clarity to know what wisdom-guided action is versus reaction. So we're all on the right path, meditating, studying the Gita, engaging in satsang. This is our path. Other comments, questions, ahas. Hi, Barbara.
Hi. Really enjoyed hearing today the concept of action purifying the mind. I'm one of those people that tends to be a doer. And so what I find is, so I have a, a tendency towards action, right? And quick action. And one of the things I notice about action is it puts you out in the world often. So it can open you up to your fears, to your frailties, and also to your humanness, because you can make a lot of mistakes, or just not show up in the way that you were planning and intending or expecting. Something can happen even out of your control. And so this idea that despite all of that, the fact that you're showing up is purifying the mind eventually through action. And I can kind of see that in my own life because when I keep showing up, I do find things happening. And so like a good example is last night, I was teaching my water aerobics class, and I constantly have this debate with myself whether I'm doing too much in life and do I need to be a reading teacher and a water aerobics teacher and somebody who serves, at the center. And I have all these other teachers that I look up to who I think, oh, they have more time to invest in their routines and they do a better job than me, and I'd like to be more like them. And somebody came to me last night and said, I just love your class. Do you teach more than one class? I think you're the best water aerobics teacher. And immediately I was just like, no, that's not me. I mean, I didn't say that out loud to the person, but I'm like, no, there's so many that are better than me. But it was just a really good for reminder for me that yes, you do do a lot of things and you keep showing up, and then things you grow through it. I can continue to grow, and whether it's affirmation like it was in this case, or sometimes it's just learning that, oh yeah, something happened that I, where I feel like I showed a weakness, but I can still show up. I can be kind to my, I can learn to be kind to myself. So this idea that you keep showing up despite the fears, the frailty, the humanness, and then you open yourself up to, and how am I being blessed through this? How am I learning? So thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you for speaking so eloquently to the practicality of these teachings, Barbara. The vulnerability of our humanness can be very confrontive, can't it? And, you know, when you take a look at Umaji and Roy and Yogananda, oh my goodness, they were very active in the world. Of course, Uma still is. Teaching all kinds of things and going to political events and, you know, writing and out in the world and in their spiritual centers. So, so much action. And the thing to remember is the power of our presence and our consciousness. So we may or may not be the best water aerobics teacher, but the consciousness that you bring is transformative. You know, the person may not even be able to say why they feel you are the best water aerobics teacher, but your presence and the consciousness you bring is transformative for yourself and for others. So I know who you are and how you show up, always for the with an intention to serve the well-being of all. And so this is indeed transformative. Thank you for speaking such practicality to this vulnerability of our humanness. Hi, Sumati.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, Acharya Sundari. Thank you so much for all you do. I too am prompted to think about my service as a leader at the center. And it's funny because, just as an example, when we have a garden day, garden save a day, I often lose sleep the night before. I start getting a little bit nervous and a little bit of tightness in the stomach. And we've done many of these, and it's always just fabulous. And things always just turn out perfect. But, you know, I kind of embrace that nervousness as the beginning of a teaching period for myself. How am I presenting? Am I too attached? It just is kind of a crucible of learning for me each time when I say we, I'm talking about Reverend Vivica and Erin O'Doherty and myself as leaders. And it's just an interesting, I just know that I'm learning so much by offering this leadership. And so the little bit of nervousness, I kind of welcome it. And by the end of the day, it just turns into pure joy. And I'm so glad that I'm able to do these, to serve in this way and learn in this way. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, Sumati. Yes, the recognition of the, as Roy taught Uma, the gift that we are given to be able to serve others. That can really be awe-inspiring and requires a great deal of faith, doesn't it? To surrender into knowing always that it is God working through us and that we just show up. We just keep showing up. And the more that we practice, which I know you do, the deeper that we meditate, study, and work in Sangha and serve, the more illumined our consciousness becomes and the more purified our mind and our hearts become. And then sometimes it becomes even scarier, because we realize more and more the importance of the service we are offering and the power of that possibility of transformation. And so you are not alone in what you're sharing. And I don't know what you're seeing on your screen as you're sharing, but there are a lot of people nodding in recognition of this, often this feeling of awe and whatever comes with it that can have us step back a little bit and be like, whoa. What I am about to step into has a lot of possibility. And maybe sometimes a question of how can I do it? Am I enough? And then a surrender into faith, knowing that it's God's work. And I know that that's the approach you always take. So thank you for speaking so beautifully to that. Okay, we have a few more minutes if there are others who'd like to share. Hi, Lilia.
Thank you for your teaching today. To me, it's like candy to my soul, for my soul. So, one question that I've been pondering a lot is when and how to serve? Because for a person like me that had devoted my life to serve in many ways, I had a big aha this week because that. Two people in my life now that are very stuck in some problems. And they complain and they rant and rave. And I need to do this. And I know that I have to do. And I promise that, you know. So I am witness of their anguish and that they are saying. But when you try to help, quote unquote, and to show the light, because you know that if they do this or that, they are going to get unstuck. But then when you show them, they grant you. You don't understand. Really. So I was so hurt because how many months you go through the same thing? And then I just realized I had this big aha. Leave it to God. It's in the divine's hand. You do what you can, but if you get a slap in your face or you get thrown in there, you know, just leave it alone and trust that the divine will take care of that. It was such a big aha, and I said, I had to liberate myself because I was yoked to that, to the problem of these two people. Similar problems, in fact. So I learned, I think I learned once and for all, trust the process, trust the divine, you do what you can, and that's all. But know when to stop giving advice or even listening, because there is a point when you could probably say, you tell me that this time and time and over. So what had you done? Or something, you know, to because I don't want to be rude and said, please don't tell me that again because I am fed up with you. So how do you have to detach somehow nicely and kindly and with love and live your life and serve other places. Anyway. But it's a difficult thing to see somebody so stuck or so, and you can see the light because you have gone through the same thing in your own life, or you have seen other people. You have read books and books on how to this or that. But anyway, I don't want to rant anymore. Thank you.
Yes, being in relationship is such a blessing and sometimes such a challenge, isn't it? And the more we awakened and our consciousness becomes illumined and our mind becomes purified and we have clear discernment, we can see into our own life and we can see, you know, what can be possible for others. And then we witness what Einstein said is the definition of insanity when we or someone is doing the same thing over and over and over and expecting a different result. But we have to remind ourselves, as you said, Lilia, that people have their own karma and they have their own path, their own destiny, and God, it's God's work. And one time a mentor told me of a similar struggle that she was having with her children, her adult children who were in their 60s and just struggling and flailing. And she said she came up with this mantra for herself, and sometimes she would say it out loud to them. I love you, and it's none of my business. It's in God's hands. She didn't always add that last part. She was a minister. I love you, and it's none of my business. And sometimes I ask people if they would like my advice, and then I tell them, like you probably, I want to remind you that I am a very direct communicator. And so eventually they say, no, I don't want your advice anymore. So, but it can be painful, can it, to watch someone suffering and flailing and to know that there is a way that their life could potentially be more easeful and graceful. But everyone has their own karma, and we don't want to rob them. We want to give them what we can, but we don't want to rob them of the gift of their own learning. Like we've had our own learning. And once we have our own learning, we don't go back. We're like, whoa, 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 I touched that hot stove. I'm not going to touch that hot stove again. And so it's painful to watch them knowing they're going to touch a hot stove over and over. But we just do what we can do, and then we have to recognize, as you said so powerfully, Lilia, it's in God's hands. It's in God's hands, and we don't know what their karma is. Thank you for sharing, always. Okay, anyone else? Hi, Roya.
Hi, Reverend Sindri. I mean, Acharya Sindri, sorry. Thank you so much for these teachings. They're so beautiful. I just wanted to share that I'm sort of having like a real-time experience of the teachings. In meditation teacher training recently, I remember we were in Grace Temple and a fire truck went by with loud sirens and stuff. And I remember you taking a moment to pause, and you said that, Umaji said we should pray during when we hear these, types of sirens. And that was a big aha moment for me because I live closer to the city now and near Highway 1, and I'm constantly hearing the sirens. And so, at best, I would react with anxiety, sort of in my gut, and at worst, with irritability because I couldn't converse with whoever was with me. And that's totally shifted for me now. And I've used it as a time to pray for their highest good, and possibly even, a few times sing the Gayatri mantra in my heart. And it's completely like woken me up in that moment, whereas before it was like this unconscious reactive behavior. So I thought it was a beautiful teaching, and I just wanted to share it. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that, Roya. Yes, life gives us so many promptings, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
It can be, as you shared, this the sirens, and we just stop for a moment of prayer in our heart, regardless of, I believe in that moment you reflected back on, I was right in the middle of a sentence of a teaching, and we just pause inwardly for a moment. And it can be a siren. It can be a honking horn. Oh my gosh, so annoying, right? I'm trying to meditate, honking horn. But we can use it as a prompting that the horn is honking to awaken our third eye. So life gives us so many opportunities to awaken. And how beautiful that you shared that you were able to let go of being annoyed and trying to control a situation, and instead surrendering into the stream of grace that life is always providing. So, thank you, and thank you all. I look forward to being with you again next week for meditation and for Gita study, and You all shared so many practical ways that these teachings are coming alive, and my prayer is that that is true for each of you, and that you continue to have these teachings awaken your inner wisdom that shines a light on your path before you. Om. Have a blessed day.